Thank you.
So I know when we first talked about this topic, I was approached by it. I had someone or one of the girls come up to me and say that the topic wasn't really relevant to her, didn't really affect her, didn't really have anything to do with her. So I just wanted to talk about why it is relevant really quickly. So a lot of people tend to think of the oppression of women as something that is far away historically or geographically. So whether it's happening, or it's happened before, like a long time ago, or it's happening far away. And I think it's because none of us as women here in Canada right now have ever been approached and told that we shouldn't have the right to vote or work or drive just because we're women. But I do think that most of the women here in the room have at one point in their life felt either devalued or discredited just based on their gender, or have encountered some sort of double standard, again, based just on their sex. So similarly in Orthodoxy, I doubt any of us here have been denied a confession or baptism or unction of the sick or anything like that, anything major like that. But it is still possible for us to feel devalued or discredited or inferior in our religion. So these feelings just come from a much less extreme place, like restraints on how we should act, what we should wear, how we should serve. You also have males in places of authority in the church who have personal beliefs and biases. And then you also have people who take Bible verses out of context having to do with women. And the Bible verses are misconstrued or misinterpreted. We also have those famous strict and technical rules. So no women in the altar, no women in the Orban room while they're making Orban, no female deacons serving in the altar. Women take communion second, females are baptized 80 days instead of 40 days, et cetera, et cetera. And just quickly, like, I'm not saying that these are the hard-hitting issues, that us as females, like, we want to be baptized in 40 days, and that, like, we have a burning interest to become priests and deacons and to make Urban, and that will fulfill us, like, religiously and get us closer to God. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that these things all combined can start to make a Coptic woman wonder, like, what do these limitations on women say about the way Orthodoxy perceives me and perceives my gender and values me and values my gender? That exact point is when a Coptic woman may start to struggle. That questioning or the idea that Orthodoxy doesn't value women has the power to make a woman feel very uncomfortable in her own religion, and this is where it becomes dangerous. This is where the relevance of the topic lies. So when this questioning and this doubt and this feeling of anger and inferiority starts to affect the individual's relationship with God, when it starts to affect the relationship with God and how they perceive his law and their chance for salvation, that's when things really turn disastrous, and that's why this issue is so, so relevant. Okay, so I just want to, again, before we start, make another note on just like the definition of feminism, because it can be very radicalized, misconstrued, misinterpreted. Again, it's very technical, those things. And those are the things that make the difference, is the way you interpret it. And then I have three questions that I prepared that I thought would spark interest with you guys. And go from there. So yeah, so the definition of feminism, this is just like Merriam-Webster, like regular dictionary. The advocacy of women's rights on the grounds of political, social, and economic equality, the belief that men and women should have equal rights and opportunities, the theory of the political, economic, and social equality of the sexes. Also, there are various strands, actually Sammy was telling me this, very helpful. There are various strands and types of feminism, and each usually has a unique characteristic or interpretation, but the overarching principle is to ensure equal opportunity or equal treatment of the sexes. And so the reason feminism is called so and not humanism is because the focus is to uplift women's rights so that they align with men's and not to bring men's rights down, which is a common misconception. Paul Daniel. Are you out there, Paul Daniel? No, he's not. Okay. Okay. So our first topic is more, the way I've structured it is more personal and then community level and then just a broader sense. This one I don't want to spend too much time on because I know we've had a lot of talks about this, but let me just throw out the topic, and I don't know if you guys want to like physically divide yourselves for a debate or if you guys just want to go ahead at it, but let me just say the topic. So So topic is hierarchy in marriage and relationships, for or against. And then you have the verse, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord, in Ephesians. Hierarchy in marriage and relationships. So hierarchy, having someone like above or below, whatever, in rank or in class, within a relationship. Are you for or against? Within orthodoxy, within marriage, orthodox marriage. Hierarchy in marriage and relationships, for or against? So the idea of rank in marriage or class within marriage, that one person is above the other. Hierarchy in marriage, for or against? Yeah, Sammy. Oh, wait, do you guys want to split into groups or just talk like this? Okay, Sammy.
Connotation, because it assumes I feel like in orthodoxy, when like people talk about like the submitting and like it's seen as a negative, like it's seen as like, oh, I'm submitting to my husband and he's gonna boss me around and tell me to do all these things for him and order me around all this stuff, when like I feel like that's what a hierarchy is, like someone who is above the other, and it's like a manager as opposed to like orthodox hierarchy where like one person is like protecting the other and giving their life for them and like in a Christ-like way. I feel like if all husbands like were embodied Christ, then it wouldn't seem so bad, but it's not the case.
Just to be clear, you have to give like, this is like, I'm intervening you, you're such a politician, like, yes or no?
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like, I don't like the word hierarchy.
Okay. But do you like the idea that one person within the marriage is ranked a little bit higher? Is
it ranked to lead to what it's meant to be?
I don't think there's hierarchy, like they're both the same, but I think there's different roles.
Okay.
Period.
Okay, good. Yeah, Mina.
I love the show. I'm a long-time listener. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I agree with Mariam. I think in the perfect world, we'd like to say there's two leaders or there's two people that are leading and they're equal, but then reality kind of natural selection makes one person an alpha and one person a beta. So in most cases, or in our church, I know that we've said the man leads the wife and the children and the family and the church because they're their own church. But I've come across many kind of different types of relationships where the women are the ones who quote unquote wear the pants, or the men are the ones who wear the pants. And that kind of, that sentence on its own, where are the pants? You know what I mean? Like, it's very, yeah, you know what I mean? So I think in a perfect world that there would be two leaders, but I think that there is a hierarchy and that it's a societal norm at this point after however many years human beings have been on the earth. Yes.
I wanted to expand on what Mima said because, every single time in my life where I'm sure everyone else experiences too, you've seen a female who's in like a stronger role than the male. It's always like Mima said, like, oh, she wears the pants in the family. And it's never in like a, what? Oh, in that case. So, and it's never a positive thing when somebody says it. You know what I mean? It's never like, oh, she wears the pants in the family. It's always like, yeah, you know, she wears the pants in the family. As if, like, that's such a... Yeah, it's a negative thing. It's never associated with a positive... You know what I mean?
So, yeah, and that's my question. Is it wrong for a woman to lead a marriage or to feel like she leads the marriage or to have that image that a woman is leading the family? So, like, decision-making, that's, like, do you guys believe in, like, unilateral decision-making? The man makes the decision and the woman will follow. About finance, children, anything. Like, stuff that happens in a marriage, you know? Welcome.
Like, there's nothing wrong with it as long as the beta trusts the alpha. Whichever it is. So, like, if the man is making decisions that he's not making them without, like, consoling, or not without, like, his wife's approval or something, or, like, at the end of the day, like, okay, he can say, okay, I'm going to make this decision, but his wife, I feel like his wife should be like, okay, I trust that you're going to make the right decision, or I trust you with this decision or something like that. Like, as long as there's mutual trust between the two. Not as in, like, I'm going to make the decision whether you like it or not. I feel like there's a difference.
Okay, very good. I don't know, do you guys have anything else to say about... I was expecting you guys to talk more. No? Okay, so I did have like some... Yeah.
No, I just wanted to say that I think in terms of leadership, a marriage should be... the man complimenting the woman complimenting the man. There could be leadership in different aspects of the marriage, and it doesn't always have to be that the man is domineering and possessive and controlling, because I think that actually shows a huge insecurity, and that's not a real leader, and it's not a real man either. At the same time, if a woman's domineering and controlling, possessive, and babies the husband, also you have a very weak dynamic between the couple. But if there's leadership in different attributes of the marriage, I think... for the most part, men do some things better than women, and women do some things way better than men. If there's a baby crying in the middle of the night, I personally, like, I can try to calm the baby down, but, like, I think a lot of times the woman could be a lot better at that. If there's a rat in the basement, I think... like, it's just, like, these little things that, like I don't want to call them, like, gender roles, per se, but at the same time, there's certain things that I think... men do far better than women. There are some things that women do far better than men that complement each other.
I agree with everything that you're saying, 100%. But then we have like effeminate men and masculine women, and I'm saying that like we act like they don't exist in the Coptic Church. Like, let's step out of the Coptic Church for a second. I've come across many of those kinds of people. And I'm not talking about, like, the trans. Like, go trans. Like, I'm not saying that. Like, I'm saying in general. You know what I mean? I feel like the gender roles are created from, like, the time in which a child is brought home from the hospital. Who's driving the car and who's sitting in the back with the baby? You know what I mean? It's that early on that we kind of realize the talents that God's given each gender. And the kind of equitable stake that they have in the roles that they're going to play in their children's lives and then, you know, as they get older. So, yeah, there are hierarchies or whatever, but it's kind of what we make of them.
Okay. Yeah, that's excellent, actually. You guys are, that's awesome. That's pretty much exactly what I wanted to say. So when we look at the verse, wives submit to your husbands, and I think, again, like we've talked about this a few times, so I won't spend too much time on it. But we have to make sure that we know that the woman is submitting to the man as the church submits to the Lord. And so you have to think of it, the church submits to the Lord. So you have to think of it, like, does the Lord think of us as servants or slaves when we do what like, our commandments, his commandments, like, are we considered slaves and servants? Like, no. We, as Galatians chapter 4, verse 6 says, Because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying out, Abba, Father. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. So again, we see that we are not slaves to Christ. So the church is not slave to Christ. So a woman is not a slave to her man. It's more of a submission of love, like we said, as family. So there's, in the Bible, that it makes a parallel of family as like a son or a daughter. So in Genesis, you have, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So you see that kind of leaving the parents and entering the marriage, and it's a different kind of submission. So do you see what I mean? Like, you submit to your parents, leave to get married, and you submit then to your spouse. And then you also have to remember, too, like, the second portion of the verse. So it says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. So husbands aren't off the hook. Women submit to their husbands, but husbands also submit to their wives. And in fact, like, Christ gave his life. Like, what more submission is that? So yeah, and then you also have, I just wanted to point out, too, like, the humility and submission of all Christians. Like, we take this verse, wives, submit to your husbands, and we kind of focus on it. But the whole chapter before that, we're commanded to submit to one another in love. And it comes on the tails of a full section on walking in love and living with the Spirit. Yeah, and then you have the epistles that are littered with instruction on how Christians in general are supposed to humble themselves and encourage one another and basically put others ahead of themselves. So you, like, it's easy to focus on women as those who submit, but all of us as Christians, like, that's basically what Christianity is based on, is just submission and putting others ahead of ourselves.
Also from the beginning in Genesis, when we try to look at the first family, like, God who made the first family, like, he got Eve from Adam. He got from the ribs, which is like all the, like, other the church fathers explained that it's not from the head, so she will be superior, or not from his foot, also he will be superior. So from the ribs will be like helper comparable. So they are both the same, and they also, like, literally they were only one flesh. They were like from one flesh. So that's the family, the meaning of the family in the Christian.
Okay, so next topic. I hope you guys talk more because, like, it's like a debate. Come on. So the next topic I chose was on more of a community level. So women and their function in church service, inferior or not? Is a woman's role in the Coptic Orthodox Church to be inferior? Is her service inferior to the service of the males, of priests and deacons and bishops and everyone? Sammy, start us off, please.
I don't feel like a lot of women want to be like, oh, we want to be priests, we want to be pope, all this and whatever. But, like, I don't really know what the role of the woman is in the church. And people are always like, it's to keep the kids quiet. And, like, I feel like that's kind of insulting.
Okay. No, it's fair. It's fair because of that. It's fair. I actually, like, when I was doing some of my research, the stuff I was reading, I was like, oh my gosh, why am I Orthodox? Like,
okay, so Orthodoxy means, like, tradition, right? So, like, if it was always a tradition that, like, a man will be a priest or a deacon or whatever it is, then, like, we should keep it that way. Like, that's, if that's how it's always been, then, like, who cares? That's how it's gonna be. But, like, women can find other ways to help out in the church. Like, in communion, for example, like, they could give out the water if they want to, or, like... I'm being serious.
So males are blessed with, they are able to touch the Eucharist. Like, they are dealing with the Eucharist in the altar. And I have to hand out water to the snot-nosed kids? Like... Okay, Yeah. One of the answers I found online, why aren't women allowed on the altar? Or why can't women serve in the altars? It was like, if women can't even go into the altar when they're baptized, like, they bring them to the foot of the altar, then how are they supposed to serve in the altar? And it was just like, you, like, what? Like, that's the same rule you're applying to the, yeah, it was messed up. But yeah, does anyone have anyone else? Anything else? Yeah, okay, good.
I think the church is so much more than the liturgy. So maybe like in the liturgy, men have a higher role, but there's other aspects of church where like women take the lead, especially like in service, like service for the needy and other kind of things. Women tend to take the lead, and that's a big part of church too. So just because it's maybe inferior in the liturgy doesn't mean it's so bad.
Services, if you want, we can. You can, if you have a point about another aspect of church, you can go ahead.
I definitely have to agree with Beher, because a lot of times we glorify like the imagery of the liturgy as so important when we see deacons that are all male on the raised platform here, or deacons in the altar. But like a lot of the church, the life of the church happens not on Sunday morning during liturgy. It happens like when we're doing service to the poor and the needy and the elders and everything in between. And like I think like Beher was saying, a lot of women take huge leadership roles, and they're very good at organizing and motivating people that some men can't come close to even. So I think there's definitely a huge role. And like also the fact that women are here like in the church and they're participating as members of the congregation, that's a service in and of itself. A lot of people don't understand that like that a congregation's role is a service. It may not be in the altar, but it's definitely in the church, and it's like it's a crucial part of the church. Without it, the church can't function. So it might be a different role. It might not be a priest or a deacon, but at the end of the day, it's crucial to the functioning of the church, you know.
For 2 minutes and no one was giving me the microphone. I was going to say that maybe this ideology is just is very specific to different parts of the world, because, you know, I heard that in other Coptic churches in the world there are female deacons and some.
They are deacons, but they also serve an altar bill for water.
Well, I'll ask Mario, because he was the one that told me.
It's exactly what she said.
No, but I mean, like, the role is so different. Like, here we've never seen what they have, you know, even on that degree, on that level. What, I'm not sure what they do. What do they do? They just sit in the front? See, we don't even have that here.
Yeah.
Right?
Devil's advocate over here.
So we have traditions in our church, right? Don't you think it's ignorant of us to not question those traditions? Like, if I was an engineer and I was told this is how you build a bridge, and I never questioned it and I kept doing it that way, how do we innovate? How do we move forward? How do we do those things? I'm not calling for like a new ecumenical council. But what I am saying is those ecumenical councils that led us to the point that we're at were led by human beings.
Yeah, and following tradition is a lot emptier. A lot of the traditions have stated reasons behind them. We need to understand.
First of all, it's not tradition. It's God's order. It's not kind of tradition by human being. That's how God ordered it. But first of all, we need to think about, if we talk about Orthodoxy, the first one after Jesus Christ in heaven is Saint Mary. So that's even above all popes, all apostles, all cherubim and seraphim, is Saint Mary in heaven. That's number one. Like when we think about Orthodoxy, like not giving women the positions, like we have to think about that. That's number one. Number two, we're talking about only focus on who is serving in the altar, as if this is the only thing that will make people higher than others. However, like even Jesus Christ himself, like when he started to talk about service, he started to talk like washing feet. So it's not about if I'm not serving in this position or this, that means I'm lower than the other. It's kind of rules, like it's a head and body. Like, you know, I cannot say the like, if I'm not the head, so I'm lower, like the hand is lower than the eyes, whatever. So it's a kind of one body, it's kind of one, like, and again, like in the Orthodoxy, like we have Saint Mary, we have to think about that.
Devil's advocate, though, but we're not just talking about, like, bishops and priests. They don't just get to go on the altar. They are bishops and priests, and they hold authority in the church. They make decisions. They, like, they're unilateral powers a lot of the time.
No, I just want to say that it just seems that every time we bring up, like, a woman's role in the church, the argument against it is always, well, no, you have other roles. But, like, I think our question is, why can't we have those exact roles?
Saying here and what Amir said about understanding why we have those separate roles, why does the man have this, like, is it wrong to question why God put man as a priest or whatnot? And when you say that women have other roles, no offense, but we're equal in every single other role. Like, in Sunday school, I've never seen, like, the woman is the leader of Sunday school, you know? No, but I mean, like, in general. Like, in general, there is no role for the woman in the church. We're equal everywhere else. So explain to me why.
So I think we're talking about Sunday school and whatever, any other service other than in the altar, you can be, like, now we have Sarah's leading the discussion. It's not men, like, right? Anyone, right? What, men or women, like we can... It's not like because someone, I think what you're talking about is like someone when you read like St. Paul epistles, like, you know, a woman doesn't raise the voice or doesn't, that's another stuff, like, but now we have like Sarah's talking and maybe Misha is giving topics. Yeah, no problem. Anytime, Sarah, like, you know, we can give you some. No, I mean, it's focusing on only, like, when we talk about service in a church as authority, so we misunderstand the service in the church. So this is not the way even Jesus himself talk about service. So we now can see, like, yeah, bishop giving orders or pope giving orders or authority, but this is not the way how Christian talk about service. Service is like in a lower level than people. Like, you know, when Jesus himself put himself down and start to wash the feet of the disciples. That's the right meaning, the real meaning of service, not the way it was like, you know, I'm giving order, I'm giving authority. Maybe it looks like now that way, but I mean, it's not even themselves, not all of them, I mean, I'm talking about how to be like, it's not authoritative kind of orders.
Amir, and what Sandra was saying, what Sandra means, and I think what Leila also means, is that there's no roles in the church that are exclusively for women, besides ones that are naturally given to them, like childbearing and taking care of children, all this stuff. Like, this is, God forgive me for saying this, but I feel like Saint Mary is the highest because she was Christ's mother. Like, Christ couldn't have been born from a man. Like, no, but I'm saying. That's beyond the point I was trying to make. Like, there, what Sandra's saying is like Sarah should be teaching today, but like this is, it's not like a role that's exclusive to women. And like when you go into Sunday school, it's not like men cannot enter the Sunday school room, the baptisery where women teach. And like, I think that's what they're trying to get is that, and whether we deny it or not, the bishops and the popes and all of them, they do have authority. They do make. Like decisions for that affect a lot of people. Yeah, they hold a larger stake. And like, I don't know if any women here particularly want to be deacons and bishops and stuff, but the clear roles of the women that are separate aren't like clear. Like the whatever women do in the church, men also do. So it's like there's still a hierarchy.
My only comment about this is, we're talking right now about services, and it seems the whole discussion is about, what about me? Like, what am I doing? When we look at service, it's about what's happening with the others. So right now, there's a lot of focus on us, which makes this it starts to make this generate this very selfish idea of me and what am I doing? Oh, look at someone else, or look at this, or look at that. That's just part of it. And I think a lot of times we feel that these services, let's say being a priest, we feel like, oh my God, he's a priest. A priest is not something that anyone, like, I wouldn't want my best friend to be a priest, because the way that he's going to be judged, like, on the last day is going to be way worse. It's not something that's given to us in terms of, like, a gift that we deserve. It's really by the grace of God. It's not something that's owed or that God owes each and every one of us, whether male or female. So we have to take that, I think we need to shift that idea that a priest is a little bit higher. He's not a little bit higher. He's a member of the congregation. Yeah, he's a leader chosen, but it's not something like I would want to be put in that position, in a priest or a bishop or a pope, because those positions, whether they come with, like, let's say some of that authoritative thing, again, coming from God, not coming from them, but they come with a lot more responsibility, and with that responsibility, they are judged on each and everyone's head. So a priest is judged when he passes away and goes to heaven. He'll be judged on all, each and everyone in his congregation, and God's going to ask him, what happened here? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? It's not something that should be taken so lightly.
You're viewing priesthood as more of a burden than a privilege or something like that. Okay.
Okay. So there's just one point I want to start with, is we're an Orthodox church. And the word Orthodox, basically everyone knows, means like faith that does not change. So we have traditions from the days of Jews that we still do, okay? The question is, are the women, like, the service, so what's the question again?
Women in the function of the church service inferior or not?
Okay, so women in the function, service in church. Let's go back to the days of Adam and Eve. Did Adam come from Eve or Eve come from Adam? Eve came from Adam. And if we look after, Jesus is known to be the second Adam, right? So why did Jesus come as a man and not as a woman? Basically because if he comes as a man, he's saving man and woman because woman came from man. But if he comes as a woman, he's only saving the woman's mankind, right? And Jesus is known to be also the high priest, right? So the high priest, when we talk about priest or bishop or all these orders in church, it has to be a man because Jesus is a man, right? I don't know if, like, you guys get my point.
Yeah, but to your point, Christ didn't just appear on earth. He didn't just appear as a 30-year-old. He came through woman. There's a verse in the Bible, I can't remember, I have it in my notes, but women came from man, and man came through woman.
Women also, they have service. Like, if you look at Mary Magdalene or Martha, all these people, they still serve. They're serving, and their service is important. If it wasn't important, they wouldn't be mentioned in the Bible. So, technically, women are serving in church. It's just some things are some decisions has to be taken by men because men who?
I respect what Mina said about we're not supposed to selfishly look at why not me, but in the same time, we're supposed to understand what we're doing. And I find a lot of us, in a lot of cases, not just in feminism and all of this, we blindly take what we're taught in Sunday school, including as to why does the man have the role of priest? Like, just understanding, not, I don't want to be a priest or anything like that. It's just why.
So I think that it's very normal and very healthy if a woman is asking herself, how come I'm not able to be a priest, or how come I'm not able to be a deacon? I think it's actually part of your faith to be able to reconcile these differences and to think about it even. But at the end of the day, if you look at Byzantium, there is a precedent for women being deacons in the church. Whether or not that's going to be something that we look into and, like, start happening kind of thing, I'm not sure. But if you look at the other major role, which is the priest, I think some of the church fathers say that there is no precedent of like a woman being a priest since Christ was a man. And that's very concrete, and there's no like, I feel like there's no compromise on that, especially from the church fathers. And when we look at their wisdom and like their insight into these things, it should definitely be like a major thing leading the discussion, so to speak. Yeah, like out of all the other roles, it's the only one that a woman can't take is that of a priest, since Christ was a male. So the priest, as a symbol of Christ for our congregation, should also be a male. So I thought I'd just throw that in there.
Excellent. I could let the Google for you. Does anyone else have anything to say about any of that? No? Okay, so you guys pretty much touched on almost everything I have here. I looked first historically and biblically biblically, and I found, again, there's no women as priests in the Bible. So priesthood should not be a position that devalues the Coptic women or discriminates against them. Rather, it can be referred to symbolic significance of the male role, which represents God the Father. So Jesus chose men as his disciples and gave to them roles in teaching and spreading the faith. As they went from region to region, they began churches and ordained bishops to remain in the region and teach the word. Priests and deacons were then ordained and taught the liturgical service so that cities and villages could hear the word. So we have to look at it that the Coptic church is like the apostolic time. We heard about Peter and Paul and the apostles preaching, and before that, St. John baptizing. But we never heard of Mary Magdalene or any other women living in the first century as priests or baptizers or anything like that. In fact, like Martel said, in the whole Bible, there's not a single example of a female priest. This is, again, not to say that women are kept out, but they take a different role, and they're also talked about and praised. So in chapter 8, we have many women ministering to the Lord. We have many female prophets, Deborah, the judge of Israel, Huldah, Anna, Esther as a queen, and we have women who gave their homes to be churches in the Bible, St. Mary, the mother of St. Mark the Evangelist, Mary Magdalene announcing the good news of Christ's resurrection to the apostles, and then you have actually at the crucifixion mostly women at the feet of Christ, except for St. John. So we do play a role in the Bible, it's just not priesthood. And then again, I touched on St. Mary here. So we have to look at the way we praise St. Mary. We don't praise her for her intelligence or her leadership or her wit. We praise her more for her humility, her kindness, her grace, and her ability to suffer in silence. We have to look also that she was given arguably the most important role of caring for, and raising Christ. And then the last point here with St. Mary is if God intended for women to be called to priesthood, I think that the first woman would have been St. Mary, and she would have kind of taken that on. And then again, we have the notion, I did some research and I found one blog post or whatever, and it kind of divided the church between clergy and like congregation. And so the congregation involves all the people in the Christian community. You have church boards, various committees. These people make important decisions regarding like financial and direction of the church. And then the Sunday school system, obviously. And the important thing to note is that both need each other to survive. It's not just like priests can come up here and do the mass and there's no congregation. Like, they need each other to survive. And so then the next thing you want to make sure that we're looking at service in the church the right way. So serving in the church does not just happen behind the altar, like you guys said. Every role in the church is just important as the next. And then I have a quote from His Holiness Pope Shenouda III. He says, "Every member in the body of our Lord has its dignity, its work, and its importance. We cannot say that all members may be heads, all may be eyes, may be arms, may be hearts. We cannot say this. If a woman is not called to be a head, perhaps she is called to be a heart, no difference." So then you have in 1 Corinthians talking about the body is not made up of one part but many. If the foot should say, "Because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body," like it can't happen. And the eye cannot say to the hand, "I don't need you," and the head cannot say to the feet, "I don't need you." So we have lots of references in the Bible. And then the final thing I want to say about this topic is we have to look at femininity as a unique strength in the church. So I took a few excerpts from some blogs that I was reading. But To be feminine is a special kind of strength. It's a different, appealing kind of power that allows someone to influence her world in a way quite distinct from the way a man will influence the world. It pleased the Lord to create woman to complement man, not to compete with him or be a more round copy of him, like a rounded copy of him. And then you have Corinthians again say, man is the image of glory. Man is the image and glory of God, but woman is the glory of man. So you have someone comment here, femininity isn't weakness, it's a glorious, splendid crown on humanity. The qualities that mark feminine women, softness, sweetness, kindness, the ability to relate well to people, they're judged in socio-political and workplace environments. But these are attributes that should be sought after in Christianity and in one's spiritual life. So it's not a bad thing. And then Pope Shenouda also said, it is not being against women, but it's a matter of classifying the gifts of God. So that's a different way to look at it, too. Last topic on the broader level. So just in general now, after our discussion, does feminism have a place in Coptic Orthodoxy? Yes or no? Can I be a Coptic Orthodox feminist? After everything we said.
If you view the topic in its like purest, most basic definition as the equality of the sexes, because I think people confuse like equality with equity, like saying you have two different size glasses and you have the same amount of water in them. It's the same like value, but two different, like two different ways of showing it. I think if you're going along that definition of feminism where like you, where the, they have different roles, or even just like a bunch of men having different roles from a bunch of from a bunch of women having different roles, but all like having the same value, I think you could say that they go together. They can go together.
I think it's fair because although that's what the church, like the church stands on equality, I think that the church as a building like is different everywhere because some churches don't follow that rule. So if you tell me I can't serve an altar because it's a man's role, you still tell me I can't enter. If I can't serve or bond because it's a man's role, I still can't enter. So if my role is to give birth to a kid, then the man can't enter the room. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's like, why does the church, like why is it not concrete on those things? Like, fine, it's your role, but what is it about the woman that she cannot enter that ground? And some churches will stand by the idea that it's holy ground and that we cannot. So if the church, like, as like dogmatically, like it says, like, that the church is equal, then why does every building differ?
I just want to say something. There are women that are deacons, by the way. There are women that are deacons. Louder. There are women that are deacons. They put a tonia on and they stand. With, they stand. It's the thing is, it's first of all, it's the Holy of Holies. Okay, back in days, no one was allowed to enter. So the fact that there's already deacons inside, you should. It's not a change. It's. We're adapting to.
Layla said, why can't we adapt now? And actually, I was speaking with Abuna Anthony on this, and he told me he related it to the issue of manufacturing in North America and how we were at humans, and then, or I think it was like men, and then women entered the workplace. And then things started getting like automated, and he was saying how like, never mind.
I wanna comment about the altar, and you're not allowed to go to the altar. Actually, it's not only women not allowed to go to the altar. Anyone not serving the altar should not go to the altar. It's not exclusively women. and the urban room. Like, urban room is not like a haggad, it's a kind of tradition. It's not like a biblical urban room to do. I'm talking about the altar now. If you're not serving men or women, if not serving in the altar, you should not go to the altar. It's only... Even if you're a deacon and not serving in the altar, you should not go to the altar. It's not about women or men. That's because altar is just to serve. It's not about to why you're going to the altar if not serving. Again, we're talking about the rules. Sorry? That's the rule of the church. Like, we can serve. I can give you reference. No. I can. If you go to the like, no. If you go to the like, I can give you. I have one book to talk about how the rule of the deacons and the rule of the who's serving the altar back in church. Now we are not respecting that, but we are not respecting out of stuff also.
Inside the woman's altar, not even this altar, the woman's altar, and attending the liturgy outside is a completely different experience. A, because I'm not distracted, and B, because I can see everything right in front of me. So when you have churches that put an altar inside each one, I cannot see anything. So it's a whole different experience. You know what I mean? I can't see Abuna doing anything. So when I'm out here, it's like I'm not really, like, yes, it's part of the Mass because, yeah, we're chanting and everything, but no, I'm not really part of the Mass. When I'm inside, it's something completely different. I can see Abuna right in front of me. I see everything he does with the Eucharist. You know what I mean? So, okay, I understand what you're saying. It's not my role, but, like, it does put a huge wall between us women.
And Omerta. Okay. So I have a slight change in topic. Just a slight change in topic. So we all know Pope Tawadros is a pretty forward-thinking pope, right? He's talked about, you know, leading the Coptic Church into the 21st century and talking about how an amalgamation of one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church, you know, including the Catholic Church and the Orthodox churches, to have one calendar and follow one kind of schedule, if you will. How would you feel, men and women in this church here, how would you feel if Pope Tawadros decided, or it came to him, or God spoke to him, that these rules were now going to change, and our position on, and just try, like, stay with me, and our position as a church was to change, and this was what we needed to do as a church to, I don't want to use the word stay relevant, but to actually, like, continue our legacy as a traditional church and whatever. How would you feel as someone who's followed those traditions for as long as you can remember, born into this church, and then all of a sudden that gets changed? Because I only say that because I know in our church history, yes, we are the most traditional, but things like that has happened in the past 500, 600, 700 years. So how would that work?
Okay. The question itself is not like, because that's not happening that way in our church. Like, we are apostolic church. From, like, you can draw a line from now, from Abuna Marcos and Abuna Shenouda, till Jesus Christ was talking to apostles. No one in the church, and it never happened, no one just suddenly wake up and is like, you know, the Holy Spirit talked to me and told me, I want to change that, because the Holy Spirit does not change. The Holy Spirit is God. So if the Holy Spirit said something to someone in the first century, it will be the same one in the 5th century, 15th century, 50th century, because he's God. He's talking, he does not change his mind. So I cannot assume that will happen. Because
I'm completely with you, and I agree with you, and God doesn't change. The thing that does change, though, is the world. The world has changed leaps and bounds. And we're talking, like, Jesus' time, you know, where women were...
I just want to continue, because when Pope Todres talked about change, he was talking about a change in some, like, there is, we have to just step back. We have to, talk about tradition, T capital tradition, and tradition, T small tradition. The T small tradition, we cannot change. Like, we cannot change, not praying only for the River Nile, because now in America and Canada, we don't have the River Nile. So we can add flight, because back in the day, there was no only ships and whatever. This is T small tradition. We cannot change it. We can, who's taking communion first, or because you mentioned that it's not the rule in church. Like, tomorrow, if Abuna Shmuel said, I will give communion to ladies first, that's fine. It's not T capital tradition. It's like, even it's not T small tradition, it's like, you know, just an order. And to prove that, some churches, they give communion to servants first before other congregation, or most of them like women. So, I mean, T small tradition, you can change, you can play, you can turn it like whatever, you can do it. But T capital tradition, it's something like the Holy Spirit took the church fathers, and the church father, like people who like the church said like this, the church father who like really we got like they have like condition to be church fathers. It's not even all the first centuries like church fathers, like very selected people. So this T capital tradition was like come from even when Abuna is talking about the absolution and the general absolution, he's talking that way. He gave the absolution like the Holy Trinity, and then the apostles, and then the Archbishop and the Bishop until Abuna. That means he's reminding us whatever happening in the church is coming from the Holy Trinity. You can draw a straight line from now till forever. You can't wake up in the morning and say I will change the T capital tradition because I figured out we're old. Fashion the church. We cannot say that, but T small tradition, we can do whatever.
I think kind of relating to you, the original question and kind of what you said, Mima, I feel like for something like that to happen, whether it's a good change or a negative change or whatever, or whether it's perceived to be a good change, it wouldn't, I don't think, Amir said, it wouldn't happen overnight or over a week or something. It would probably be something that would happen over, hundreds of years based on how much we've already been, conditioned through history or through our tradition and whatnot. And, I have a bit of, a second question. It's, we say this notion of feminism where... the two sexes are equal but different, sounds compatible with orthodoxy. But then we have the issue of culture, because I feel like culture plays a really, really big role in the hierarchy of women in the church, and especially the double standards, the way women are treated, the way, it is this hierarchy, and it is superiority complex, I think, in the church. So, how do you almost eradicate the negative parts of the culture and folk keep the true orthodoxy?
I couldn't agree more with what Sammy just said, because we have to keep in mind that the church coexisted with the Islamic faith in Egypt for hundreds of years, and we had to adapt and evolve according to how they did things too, right? Because there came a point in time when men and women used to stand side by side in the congregation, and then all of a sudden, whoever in the culture was saying, these Christians are impure and whatnot, and they faced a lot of persecution, so slowly the women started standing on the right side, and the men started standing on the left side, so there was some segregation. And a lot of these influences are purely cultural, so I completely agree with what Sammy was saying. I just wanted to comment quickly on us changing versus the world. I think it's fair to say that in matters of style, it's fair and it's okay for us to change with the times, but when it comes to principle, we have to hold our place and stand firm. And I think that's because the world will change, and the world's main influence is demonic. And there's a lot of evil that that moves the world forward. But at the end of the day, our church has to remain holy, and it has to remain the body of Christ. And for us to do that, we don't necessarily have to follow what the crowd is doing all the time.
Okay, this is not to like I forget the word, but like offend Layla in any way. But I love you, I promise. It's not the word I'm looking for, but anyway. Like you were commenting on you wanting to see what happens in the church and like the altar, like in Saga sometimes like they will videotape the altar and they'll stream it online. So like that's
it's not the idea of denying the seat, but the physical that church and denying the seat in a certain way during me.
Yes.
No, it's not, it's just a whole idea of the altar again, why can I not? Okay.
I think that concept is just a question of convenience. So if it's a really big church, it's just convenient for them to have more altars. It's not a rule in the church to have more than one altar. I think it's just like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's not set in stone. It just so happens that in some churches you won't be able to go inside.
But I think she's referring to the fact that she can't actually enter the altar and serve the deacon and like watch and have that experience.
We forget the fact that priests get tempted like every second in the altar. And it wouldn't help having a woman there. Definitely.
Okay. That's fair.
That's a point I didn't think about. Honestly, that's careful. You have to be careful there because that's almost saying, like, just by someone's presence, like, that they're gonna, like, where do you draw the line, right? Like, oh, my presence here, was I asking for it, that whole movement? Like, it's hard. You're right. You have to draw a line, but I understand what you're saying.
This is so, like, amazing and nice, and it's something so like that. Sorry, is this better? No, it is, but it's not something that makes us any better than anyone else. But you're in.
She wants to be able to attend the liturgy in a very up close way, just as a deacon or a priest would.
That's what you're saying. Some churches put you in that position, not the idea that, okay, some churches are trying to be more convenient.
Oh, so your issue is like consistency. It, like that some churches have two altars and some don't.
It's like the whole idea of like what I heard.
It's not
because you're
a woman, it's just
because
you're
churches get, yeah, back in the days it was just a table and people would sit at the table and so back in the days it was just a table and people would sit around the table, but then churches get bigger and bigger and bigger. If everyone say, why can't I go inside, then the entire church will be inside. Do you see all the men inside?
Culture stuff. Okay, so I have to acknowledge that I
just want to say often, and since then, females make the point.
say that in the microphone.
Come on, I see it with my own eyes. Because
I'm just joking. I fully understand your point, which is like, okay, I can understand you. And, you know, there is, even if we can't convince you, there is always like, I have my list to ask God when I go. So that's, you can add to the list. But I mean, it's very serious stuff when we come to the church to have communion. It's really, really the most serious stuff in my life. It's my salvation. So if I can allow anything to hinder me of enjoying that every single second in the church, I have like really stand for it, and I can fight it, and I will enjoy it wherever I, like some people, I went to Ethiopia, for example. These people, they cannot go inside the church, men and women, until they are like 70 years old or something like that. And when they come like nearby the church, they are like on their knees for like until the church, like in the, like until the mass finish. So they cannot even, they're not allowed because they're old sinners, or like they're, that's how they think. Now we are like, my point is, I cannot, don't make anything hinder your enjoy and joy of communion with God. We can debate that forever for the sake of discussion. But when it comes to the communion, like, do whatever you do to enjoy it and enjoy the communion of God. It's not about communion, it's like, we celebrate every Sunday. It's you, communion with God. But for the sake of like discussion and debate, we can continue that there in the heaven, and we'll ask God, and He will answer us. So.
Just like.
I mean, we can't continue.
Yeah. Okay, Marquisa, we are talking about whether or not feminism has a place in Coptic Orthodoxy, just to let you know. yeah, okay, so does anyone else have anything to say? I know it's getting a little bit late, but does anyone else? Yeah, okay.
I just wanted to add very briefly that a lot of people might be, they might be exposed to third wave feminist ideologies on school campuses and on TV and all this stuff, and I think we didn't discuss it too much today, but it's fair to say that I think we might have reached a consensus. Like, first and second wave feminism wanted equality, and women wanted the right to vote, and they wanted the right to unemployment insurance, and they didn't want to be left vulnerable to like a man like passing away, and they're left a widow without any source of income. All that was great. It was high-minded. It was beautiful, and I think everyone here would not have a problem with it. When you look at third wave feminism, though, a lot of the ideologies coming out of that whole branch are quite anti-Christian, and there's a lot of really negative things that I hear, especially in classes. And there's a lot of anger and resentment and bitterness coming out of young women, and even a lot of young men who are saying that men are doing this in society. Men are able to sleep with a number of women without any consequences. How come women can't do that? And you're just sitting there wondering, how about nobody does that? How about men and women don't, you know? Exactly. I'm thinking of like the typical third wave feminist ideology, and it's like, it is growing, and we need to, absolutely. And I hope we don't get affected by these kind of ideologies. And at the end of the day, if you're like feeling vulnerable to these kind of thoughts. I'm not powerful enough, I don't have any authority, I don't do this and I don't do that, and I feel oppressed. I think empowerment and all these wonderful things through Christ are far more rewarding than you trying to go out into the world and finding them through feminism. Because if you go through the number of women who've gone through that, they have not found happiness or empowerment, they've only found enslavement.
Okay, so yeah, so that's pretty much, like, you guys have said everything. I don't want to be too long. I just have some final thoughts for this topic, for feminism and orthodoxy. Again, just like you guys said, we have to make sure that we know that no one is above the other. Tons of support in scripture. So God created man in his own image, the image of God created he him. Male and female, he created them. There's neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Jesus Christ. And then again, just like what you guys were saying, like you have to remember not to get caught up. So our essential purpose of being here on earth is to reach the kingdom. Let us not be distracted. Leave things which distract us from reaching God. We can argue about feminism and chauvinism, but where does that get us? It makes us very angry, spiteful, reactive, and distances us from the vessel of salvation, which is the church. So we have to look at things in the way the Bible intended and the way things are meant, and not necessarily the way they are applied, because again, you have a lot of bias in different churches and inconsistencies. And so the other thing I want to talk about too is that we have to remember, in its definition, feminism applies strictly to society, socio-political context, and there is economic context too, but there's no mention of spirituality. So that's something to think about, like not to get caught up that feminism should be super relevant in the church and super present in the church. And then I did read a really good article actually, and it was just looking at feminism, and it kind of divided things up. So I, like most humans, have a really bad habit of categorizing things and thinking of things in a really like rounded way. So I read this and I was like, oh my gosh, yes, like I finally had my revelation. So despite what many Christians believe, it is impossible to roundly condemn or confirm modern feminism via the Bible. The beliefs and convictions within feminism are too broad, too varied, and too contradictory to allow a complete judgment. Feminist ideologies can be good, neutral, or bad. And then the article goes on to kind of split feminism, so into the biblical, the neutral, the unbiblical. So the biblical, it's biblical to fight for the protection of others around the world, to encourage other governments to ban rape, female genital mutilation, and human trafficking. It's biblical to ensure mothers can support their children, to ensure they have rights to their children. It's good as affirmed by John and Paul through their actions and words. It lists like education and growth, and then it has some verses to back it up. Medical care that addresses women's needs, equal value in sexes, which again goes back to the verses we read. And the neutral. So this was kind of where it got me, the neutral. So equal rights are not discussed in the Bible as we think of them today, but they're also not discouraged. Women are free to seek equal opportunity in education, business, arts, government, and other secular areas. But just as men, their families must be provided for, and they must ensure that their home is running smoothly. Basically, the unbiblical about feminism, abortion, female clergy, and then radical feminism where women to compete against women or be more valuable than men or compete against men. So that's pretty much all I had to say. So that's it. Hope you guys enjoyed. I enjoyed listening to all your thoughts and everything. Very interesting. I hope you guys all learned something. I hope you guys will relay this information to Paul Daniel. I hope you're listening somewhere out there, Paul Daniel, maybe on YouTube, but yeah.